Ugh, another naked pic request.
Why doesn't he stop?
I know, he just keeps on and on and on. Maybe I should just send him one?
No way!
He said I could trust him.
Heard that before.
Look what happened to, what's her name? Some guy shared her pic and it broke the internet. Everyone saw it. Her parents, her teachers. Poor girl.
He's getting well desperate.
Ugh, forget him.
No one should be pressured into sending a naked picture. To find out more, search Disrespect Nobody.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for downloading. And if you have downloaded us individually, we wish that you subscribe because we want to get our subscription numbers up, because the more subscribers we have, the more people who listen and the more episodes we get to do. And also, please write us a review if you can. If you give us a 5-star review, we'll mention you on the podcast. I just want to get this at the top of the show because we have so much to talk about.
Yeah, in a blatant attempt to get our numbers high up, we're talking about a little tiny indie movie that came out this weekend.
That's right, Avengers Age of Ultron. Maybe you've heard of it. It was just released in America a couple of days before this podcast. Both Matt and I have seen it. But before we get into that, we want to talk a little bit about the Star Wars trailer, because our last episode, we had to delay the release for several different reasons behind the scenes, but we had to delay the release of our last episode, and our big Star Wars news was talking about how they got all the films got a digital release. Now, some of you who listen to are like, why aren't they talking about the trailer? Well, that's why. So let's talk about the trailer now, and also because we saw it not only on our computers, but also on the big screen before Age of Ultron. So what was your reaction to it? What do you think? Broad strokes.
You know what, Tristan, I have to say, I'm not as in love with Star Wars as the rest of the world is. I mean, I've seen the original trilogy, really like the original trilogy. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though, which I intend to correct before the new one comes out. The prequel trilogy, I don't think there's much that I can say that hasn't been said in the last almost 20 years since Phantom Menace came out. But watching this trailer, I have to say, I was interested in the new movie, but even this one, to use a very cliche phrase, hit me in the feels in a way that I didn't think that it would. I just thought it looked amazing, and there's something to be said about some powerful imagery, and the seeing Harrison Ford as Han Solo again with Chewbacca at the end saying that we're home. Man, that was a good note for that trailer to end on.
I think the marketing team behind these trailers and behind this campaign, they absolutely know what they're doing, because when they gave us the teaser, they chose specific imagery to really evoke nostalgia as well as show us something new. And, you know, when that music hit and we see the Millennium Falcon, we're like, okay, cool, right? This is going to be fun. And then when we saw the trailer, the full trailer, it just hit me in the face, because it showed us so many new things, so many intriguing things, so many new characters. It was all brand new, but yet felt so familiar. And I think that's why it did so well, is because it shows us that we're not just going to repeat ourselves. We're not just trying to repeat the success of the original trilogy, but we are going to not pretend like it didn't happen, because with the prequels, you can't pretend that they happened because it's before. And so they're paying homage to them while breaking new ground. And just the imagery of the melted Darth Vader's mask, Luke Skywalker's robotic hand, his old lightsaber, his old lightsaber, and just the Millennium Falcon, the X-Wings. I mean, just everything was just working together to make us go, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm 6 years old again.
And then that climax. I think that climax can't be understated with Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Yeah, that's the really funny thing, is that my buddy told me, like, I was at lunch and my buddy texted me. He said, he's like, it's out, stop what you're doing, go watch it. I was like, okay. And so I went and ran, and I was literally making noise and covering my mouth so that I would stop gasping and yelping, because I was at work. And then the entire time I was like, okay, so we're hearing Mark Hamill. At least
is it Mark
that.
Hamill? Because I like it's been a, again, it's been a long time since I've seen the original Star Wars. I didn't recognize his voice, but that is Mark Hamill doing the Force is strong in my family. I have it. My sister has it. That's him.
That's audio rip from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that goes to show you how long it's been since I've seen it.
Yeah, it's audio rip from Return of the Jedi, and they also had Mark Hamill record it again so that they could use it in the echo that you're here.
Okay.
So you're hearing new audio and old audio. But, like, as it's over, like, you hear the, boom, you know, like, the music's over and then it goes to black, and I was like, for that split second, I'm like, oh, okay, so I guess we're not going to see any original characters, but okay, what, you know, that's fine, maybe next time. And then bam, fades up from black and we see Han and Chewie. It's obviously the Falcon in the background.
Yes.
And he goes, we're home. And you're just like, oh my god, it's just every single moment was, oh my god.
I don't know what this was like for you, but in the first time I went to go see Age of Ultron, I saw this trailer in the midnight crowd in IMAX with a pretty packed house. And this one got, this trailer by the end of it got near unanimous applause, which I've never seen a trailer get from people before.
You always know what has the hype and what is going well because, like, as soon as that, you hear that, ding, 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 you know, and like Lucasfilm starts to dissolve on the screen, everyone just kind of like hushes up. They're like, okay, this is it, like shh, or like, oh, yeah. You know, like you start hearing those, that rise of reaction. Yep.
You hear everybody sit up a little bit straighter.
I'm excited for it, and I think and also what was really great is that I have never seen Star Wars in 3D before, and I went to a 3D showing of Age of Ultron, and this trailer was in 3D. And I was actually pretty impressed.
There's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that whatever the quality of the actual film itself, it's going to look great. And the effects this far out already look fantastic. And mm-hmm. What I like about it so far is that it feels like a Star Wars movie. Like, it looks like a Star Wars movie. And yet, it also looks like a J.J. Abrams movie. Like, you can tell that he's the one who directed
yes.
it.
Yes, very much so. The only time when I was a little, I don't want to say worried, but I was like, oh, that is blaringly JJ and not anything else, was the camera move of, it was a TIE fighter chasing the Millennium Falcon into a destroyed.
Yes, and then it zoomed up real close. Yeah.
It was a fast zoom. Fast zooms like that don't exist in Star Wars.
Yeah, but it reminded me of, again, because it's JJ Abrams, it's the same way he shot the shuttle and the Klingon ship chasing it in Into Darkness.
Yes, very much so. And also, you saw a couple of those in Star Trek 09 when they launched on the tether onto the drill, and they were in their spacesuits.
I'm okay with this, though, because, you know, if we're going to have high-profile or up-and-coming directors, I think it's okay for them to leave, you know, their own stamp on something as long as it's not overwhelming, and I don't think it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I'm not criticizing it at all. It just raised my eyebrows. That's all I'm saying. Like, I'm not one of those old fogies who's like, oh, different, brr. You know, like, I'm not saying that at all. It's just it made me notice it. I was just like, oh, okay, so we're outside of the normal Lucas Star Wars realm, and like it kind of took me out of the movie a little. Like, obviously, it wasn't the movie; it was just a trailer. But it kind of took me out of it a little bit because I was just like, oh, it's a camera move. Okay, this isn't a documentary. You know, like some of those, like when I see those in sci-fi movies, and this is just a general overall comment, just not just a JJ comment, but when I see the fast zoom and then like the refocus and readjust and everything like that, I know they try to go for that documentary feel, but I am intelligent enough to realize that there's not a guy hanging out in the planet or in space with a camera trying to focus. You know, like, I understand that there's not really a camera there, that we're following CGI ships. And so I think that's the only thing that I don't really like, is that kind of docu-feel.
Right. Well, fair enough. But I gotta say, big thumbs up for this trailer. I'm definitely more interested now than I was before.
Very much so.
And December can't get here fast. It's gonna be a great holiday season, Justin, between Star Wars and Spectre. It's really gonna be fun.
I think those are the two films I'm looking forward to the most this year, hands down. And I mean, and I didn't want to focus too much on the negative because it was really just one thing that raised my eyebrow. But there are so many positives. I mean, the new stormtroopers, that super duper stormtrooper who's in all silver and with the cape and everything, the triple bladed lightsaber, all the new characters that I'm assuming that they're going to pass the torch to. They look amazing. They look really cool.
And they, you know what makes me like them too is that they're all, for the most part, starting out their careers. They're all kind. I've not heard of a lot of these people before, and that's a plus actually, because if I see stars in Star Wars, I just, it's not that that they can't act. It's that I'm seeing the person. Like I've always had that problem with like Liam Neeson in Episode One. I can't see him as a character. I see Liam Neeson.
Completely agree, and I think that was one thing about the prequels that set it apart from the originals, is that we didn't know these characters. I mean, like, they were brand new. Like, we saw Harrison Ford once before, and it was in a Lucasfilm, at least I did. And with this film, I mean, yeah, Oscar Isaac has been in a few films and people know who he is, but the thing is, like, I feel like he's kind of the Harrison Ford.
He's on the rise.
He's on the rise.
He really is, because he's got this role, and let's not forget, too, after this role, he's going to be Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse, so...
I had forgotten that. You're absolutely right. I'd absolutely forgotten that.
He's got two blockbusters coming up under his belt, so...
Yeah, I'm excited because, I mean, we're getting some much-needed diversity in these actors and in Star Wars. And not just with race, but with age. And I feel like it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, I agree. So that's the Star Wars trailer. Now let's move on to the main event, because we try to keep our episodes limited in runtime, but there's a lot to discuss with this new movie.
You went Thursday night. I went Friday night. And I was supposed to go Thursday night. But a buddy of mine said, hey, I got a 1-in-a-million shot. I won some tickets to go to the NFL draft. And I was like, well, I can't really be mad at him for that. Even though I have no interest in sports, I mean, he, like, it's hard for him to say no to getting free tickets to the NFL draft.
Right.
But I went to a 7 o'clock showing, and you know how I feel about people. I don't like people.
I had to twist his arm to do this review.
you're absolutely right.
But I went with the diehards. I went at 11 p.m. on Thursday night. Pretty much like for 11 o'clock. It was like an 85% packed house, and it probably would have been even more sold out if they hadn't had a bajillion showings before. Because I guess there was such high demand that the theater I went to had screenings, like 4 or 5 different screenings that night.
Wow.
But it was still pretty full. And then I went again on Friday, not just because I'll spoil it now. I really liked the movie, but because I needed to see it again, because there's so much to process in this film.
There is a lot. It's very dense, which could be considered a criticism, but there's a lot going on. There's a lot of action, a lot of story, a lot of characters. But I definitely want to see it again, but I'll probably wait. Let's just go right into it. This is obviously a spoiler-filled review.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to be talking about key details of the movie, so if you have not seen it, don't listen to this yet. Save it in your queue, download it, save it, don't listen to it until you watch it. This is very spoiler-filled. You have been warned. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Okay, Matt, right out of the theater, you're walking out of the auditorium, you're in the parking lot, what are you thinking, what are you feeling?
I'm feeling that I'm really excited. My mind is on sensory overload because there's just so much that happens in the movie. And the first thing that I'm thinking of is really the first question that I get asked a lot, or I had gotten asked pretty much the next day. Not that if the movie was good, but everyone wants to know, is it better than the first one? That's the one question that I keep getting asked. And I gotta say, when I first walked out of the theater, I didn't know, and I'm not saying, and I want to make this clear, me not knowing, it was not a bad thing. I feel like me not knowing in this instance is attributed to the fact that while Avengers Age of Ultron really does feel like a sequel to the film, like it feels thematically still within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's such a different film from the first one. Like, I can't really describe it, so... I struggled with it that night to say, and even when I got back home the next day, my parents were like, did you like it? Did you really love it? And I was like, yeah, I really liked it. I need to see it again. That's the that's the answer that I gave people. And some thought that was a bad thing or whatever. But I really want to stress that I don't think it was a bad thing. In fact, on Friday when I was going to see it again, you had called me because you had just gotten out of your showing. And I said, I told you, I need to see it again because I don't even know where this ranks in my MCU ranking order. But when I first came out, that was my initial impression.
Yeah, I think that's solid. I think that's where I was too, because I got home and my wife was like, "So did you like it?" I go, "Yeah, I did. It was really entertaining." And then she's like, "Was it better than the first one?" I'm like, "I don't know. You know, I don't know yet." I mean, that's the thing. So like, as I was leaving the auditorium, I was with my buddy, and he's not a big Marvel fan at all. Like, he just goes to the movies with me just to go, you know, like, and my wife doesn't really like to go. She doesn't like Marvel at all, really. And so I can't even drag her to see a Marvel film in the theater. And mm-hmm. So I take my buddy, and he's not a Marvel fan either, but he really liked this one. Like, as we were walking out, he's like, "Did you see that? Did you see that? What do you think of that?" Like, he was just like blabbering and going on and on about how much he loved it. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, I said, when I walked out, I said, this movie delivered on everything it promised to deliver. And I think that's the key thing that I was really happy about, is that it was entertaining, it was funny, it was dramatic, it had a lot of great character moments, and it was just an overall good time. And I was like, what more could you ask? I mean, like, was it Citizen Kane? No. You know, like, what, you know, like, if, and I tweeted this just yesterday, because I started, now that I saw it, I started going online and started reading about it more, and there's a lot of scathing reviews.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's fashionable right now to hate it just because it's so massive.
You know, I was afraid of this too, reading the reviews, because I, you know, I was obsessively keeping up with mm-hmm. them, and I was getting a little sad, if not a little depressed, last week as the critical reaction at least tended to be a little bit more mixed. Now, right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 90% from the audience, which is more of where I fall into. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that. And I'm not saying this just as a Marvel fan. I would say this all around for comic book movies. I think that there's a lot of snobbery going around just because there's a ton of superhero films coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I really do think, and maybe this, you call me a paranoid Marvel fan, but I really do think that because Marvel is so massive right now, they're eager to see it fail sometime. There's that German word. There's that German word that I can never pronounce, but it's
Schadenfreude.
That's it. And I think that there's a large case of that with some of these reviews here.
You know what? You're absolutely right, because it's like Marvel is such a behemoth that people want it to fail. And I'm just not that type of person when it comes to that. Is that like, if I don't like something, I don't hope it fails. Like, if I'm not like attracted to a certain property or aspect of a movie, I don't like, oh, well, I hope it makes $0 and I hope it just is a crappy movie. And no, I'm not like that at all. And it's just, that's what really freaks me out, is that people are like that. And what you described, and that's why I used the word fashionable earlier. I chose that specifically. It's fashionable. People want to be on this good trend of like hoping things are fail and being critical, because Forbes just released a review and the headline is "The Top 5 Things That Ultron Got Dead Wrong." And I was like, wow, that's a really powerful headline. And so I started reading it, and it was like the five things were like pillars of the movie. And I was just like, holy crap, this guy hated this film. And then you go to the summary at the end, and he's like, regardless of the things, I really like the movie. I thought it was entertaining. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you go on for pages and pages saying everything that got wrong, but you said it was a good movie and you were entertained.
Well, and also, too, I mean, another reviewer on Forbes called the movie a, quote, Galactus-sized disappointment. And I'm like, I really don't understand that. It's spilling over to today, too, a little bit. And I want to get off the negative track, because I think that this movie is really good and deserves the praise. Mm-hmm. But it's funny to me and a little disheartening that right now, as of today, it's projected to make $187.7 million over the 3 days that it's been out.
It's amazing.
It's amazing, right? But because all the projections said it was going to be over 200, people are calling this a disappointment.
Oh, good Lord. Let's just say this before we go too much further, is that we're not saying that money makes the movie. If that was the case, then Transformers franchise would be better than Indiana Jones and Star Wars put together.
But, you know, it makes me a little sad that we're in a day and age where $187.7 million is considered somewhat underwhelming.
In the first 3 days. And also, I want to clarify my statement. I'm not saying that, Transformers is better financially put together as Star Wars and Indiana Jones. What I'm saying is, like, culturally speaking, money does not make the movie. But at the same time, you need to recognize that this is, it targeted its audience, and that audience showed up.
Yeah, but it's just so stupid to hear, oh, 187.7 million, clearly Marvel is losing their magic.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. People just want to be negative. Critics just want to be negative. And, I mean, I thought our, I think our friend Lee, who's a big friend of the show and a big friend of ours on the podcast, Lee underscore Nostromo.
Yes.
He came out, he was very honest about it. He said, he's like, my friends loved it. I thought it was great. I didn't love it as much as the first one. He liked Winter Soldier more and gave it, like, I think 4 out of 5 stars or 3 out of 5 stars or something like that. And he said, he's like, all my friends loved it. Maybe I'm the anomaly, but it was good. I just liked other movies better. And I was like, hey, that's great. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fantastic. You don't have to crap all over it like other people are.
Right. So, but I just want to say and it's sad too that I get caught up in this negativity, but I want to put that aside just because you and I are here. We like to focus on positivity. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that for a sequel that had such massive expectations and for debuting during a weekend where there was a lot of other stuff going on, mm-hmm. 187 million, it puts it in, I read this too, it puts it in the, Marvel now has the top 3 opening weekends of all time. Between Avengers 1, Iron Man 3, and Avengers 2.
Yeah, and you know, so let's focus on the positive. Let's talk about what we liked, because there are some things that I didn't like, but this movie delivered. I mean, like that, if I could sum up this movie in one word, it's delivered. So what were some of the positives that you liked? Like, what sticks out in your brain that you're like, wow, they nailed it, they got it?
Well, I got to start off the bat by saying he's in the title of the film, and I really, really loved Ultron, and and James Spader is Ultron. And the funny thing is, the criticisms that I read online about Ultron are, I guess, come from comic book people who I think make up only a small percentage of the audience. But people were saying ahead of time that, oh, he's too snarky, he's not menacing enough, he's not like the comic book, whatever. But to that, I have only this to say. You don't hire James Spader to do a role and not have him be snarky. That's just the persona that he is. And I think the fact that he was snarky and sarcastic a bit during the movie not only made sense, but for me never took away from his overall threat. In fact, it made him more of a presence.
I was surprised at the portrayal of Ultron because it was very different from what they showed him as in the trailers. I thought he was going to be much more of your cookie cutter, menacing, low talking voice, like just hiding in the shadows and just be this omniscient bad guy. But they established in the movie that he has basically a demented personality that is the same as Stark's. And Stark is snarky. He's sarcastic. He's abrasive. And James Spader or Joss Whedon once described Ultron as a teenager with too much power, like a juvenile with too much power. And that's definitely how it was portrayed, because he was funny, he was self-obsessed, and he wasn't your cookie cutter bad guy. And so I think that's why I really appreciated it, but he was still menacing, like you said.
Yeah, so you know, there's that criticism that Marvel Cinematic Universe villains tend not to be too terribly memorable or a little bit forgettable. I think that I'm not going to forget about Ultron anytime soon. So
no, I love James Spader's portrayal, love his voice, love his mannerisms. It's just, I as you know, I'm a huge Spader fan, so I was impressed with Ultron. I know a lot of people think that he wasn't menacing enough, but I think he was perfect for the tone of the film.
Yeah, I think they hit it just right, actually. Second thing is that I really, and I expected this going in, but I was surprised at how well it was handled and how emotional it got me, diving into some of the Avengers backstories and personal fears and shortcomings and failings. Not all of them might have worked 100%, but some of those visions that were brought on by Scarlet Witch are mm-hmm. very, very powerful. And they got to me. And what I really liked about this film, and I was surprised about it too, is that they made Hawkeye a character.
Well, those are two separate issues. The first one with the visions and everything like that, I'm like you, I like the visions, but as I was watching them, I was like, okay, all right, that's enough. Okay, like, trim it up. I think it could have had another pass in the edit room where they could have trimmed them up a little bit, because I felt like that sequence went on just a little too long, where like when you're editing, it's you, once you establish the idea, you move on, you establish the idea and move on. And I felt like they lingered just a little too long.
Yeah. But I also feel like I like to see each Avenger got a vision except for Hawkeye, who has a great moment why he doesn't get a vision.
Yes. I thought that was very key.
The visions that I'm talking about most specifically is the first one with Tony Stark getting his vision.
That was amazing.
That was some powerful stuff. And we're doing spoilers, so we'll just go ahead and say Tony Stark gets hypnotized by Scarlet Witch, and so he sees all of the Avengers lying dead. Mm-hmm. As I guess it's supposed to be a tease for Infinity War, because I think that that's what's potentially what's coming. It was really emotional for me seeing that the who's the one Avenger who he talks to before he dies is Captain America.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a foreshadowing and of a contentious relationship. And also, it's where we get the shot of the broken shield in the trailer.
Yeah, which makes sense to me. I mean, and the whole thing of where right before he dies, Captain America grabs him and says, "You could have saved us. Why didn't you do more?"
Yeah, I think that was definitely my favorite of the visions, but I liked all the visions. I thought there could have been a little bit more meat to the bone of Captain America's vision, but I just felt like they just went a little too long. They just went a little too long.
I agree, although I love the fact that, did you recognize who the person was who was training Black Widow?
It was Julie Delpy, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I love the fact that it's the woman from the before films is this...
It's so random. I like when I saw it, like, because they released early that Julie Delpy was going to be in the movie because it was supposed to be a secret, and they Marvel dropped the ball on it because she was in they released who was going to be at this a conference or something like that, and like they needed a nameplate for Julie Delpy. But I was also surprised because you don't just get Julie Delpy for three lines.
But at the same time, though, we didn't even think that she was going to be in the movie, and we still didn't think she was going to be in the movie, because if you remember, they dropped that news on April 1st. That's when that popped up online, so I was like, oh, that must be a joke.
I feel like we might see her again.
Maybe we will, but like, so the visions were cool, but let's talk about the other thing that I mentioned, which was Hawkeye gets fleshed out in this movie, and I really got to say, a lot of the movies... good points and funny points for me come from Hawkeye, and I was surprised and yet not shocked, because after the first Avengers came out, I was so into this universe that I started watching that Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon that was on for a while that everybody kind of loved, and I really liked it. And so I saw Hawkeye on there, and I'm like, well, this guy has actually got some personality. He's snarky. He jokes with the team. They should really do this more in the movie. I hope this is what they do with him next time. And thankfully, that is what happened in this film.
I think this was analogous to what happened to Chekhov in Star Trek 3 and then in Star Trek 4, where Leonard Nimoy realized, he's like, wow, I gave Chekhov nothing to do in Star Trek 3. And so he's like, okay, well, I'll make sure that his character is fleshed out a little bit more in Star Trek 4, and he has more funny lines and more to do in the plot. And I feel like that's what happened, is that in Avengers, Hawkeye was kind of wasted. And so, I mean, while I was watching, like, when I saw him in Thor, I was like, this guy's pretty cool. When I saw him again in Avengers, I was like, this guy is kind of useless and lame. and then when I see him in Ultron, I was like, okay, this guy's funny, and he's fun, he's cool. And I'm glad, like, I was from a world perspective, not even from a movie perspective, but from like a Jeremy Renner world perspective, I'm like, hey, I'm glad he has more to do, and I'm glad he has more meat to the bone. But at the same time, we end without Hawkeye with the Avenger Initiative.
That's true. We do have a new team by the end of this film, and he's not a part of it. But I felt they set that up pretty well. And, you know, from outside knowledge, he's supposedly going to be in Civil War in some capacity. So,
okay, I didn't know that. I was wondering, I was going to ask you, I was like, how do you feel about Hawkeye not being in the next Avengers film?
I think he's going to be. And I heard he's going, at this point, all the Avengers are going to be in Civil War, but I hear he's in Civil War in some capacity. And I know for a fact that he's going to be in some part of Infinity War. Okay. So, just because Hawkeye is retired for the moment doesn't mean that we're never seeing him again.
Okay. And just to put in my two cents, I mean, I'm not one of those guys who hates Hawkeye. At the same time, I don't particularly like Hawkeye. I think he's just kind of there. That's fine. Whatever. I mean, he has some great moments, but I don't particularly in love with him. But I'd be fine. You know, like if this was his last film, I honestly would be fine.
I think this, judging by some of the reactions to some of the line readings that he did, I think this film succeeded in, if not getting you to really love him, liking him more than Avengers 1 did.
I think so too, but at the same time, I feel like this would be a good send-off.
Yeah, it would be a good send-off, but then at the same time, I'd be wondering, as all this universe-ending phenomena is going down, he's just going to stay silent the whole time? That wouldn't make complete sense, considering that we had already seen him, and he is an established part of this universe, whether mm-hmm. you love him or not. But I think one of my favorite moments in the film is with him and Scarlet Witch in the final battle talking to each other inside that ruined building. And he's just saying, the city is flying, and we're fighting an army of robots, and I have a bow and arrow.
Yeah, somebody had to call attention to it. Like, I'm so glad he's aware of how ridiculous it is.
They're all aware of how ridiculous it is. And I mean, there's a point in the film earlier where he's with his wife, who we get to meet in this film, and mm-hmm. he's talking about, they look at them, they don't need me. And she says, no, I think they do need you. And so they were very well aware of the criticisms of Hawkeye in this film. And I'm glad that they paid attention to that and did a good job, in my opinion, a good job of trying to correct that. And I think the biggest laugh my audience got was when Quicksilver knocks him over not the first time, but in the final battle. And he aims his bow and arrow at him. He's like, no one would know.
He said, no one would know.
I don't know what happened to the Quick Kid. Last time I saw him, Ultron was sitting on him.
Yeah. It's like, it's a shame. I'm going to miss him. It was great. Yeah, that was a great moment. And Jeremy Renner delivers it perfectly. And I was also glad that they gave him a wife and kids and a life outside of the Avengers, where we actually see these people have lives. And I was also glad that they gave him a wife, because like I've never liked the pairing of Hawkeye and Black Widow, because it was too obvious.
And a lot of people, that's one of the criticisms of this film, is that they didn't do that pairing. I'm fine with them not doing that pairing, quite honestly.
Absolutely, I am too.
I never got that they were romantic, as some people did from the first film. I got that they were old war colleagues.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that that's what I got too, is like, just because a man and a woman work together in a movie doesn't mean that there's romantic interest. And I know that people said the same thing about Captain America and her, and that was just stupid.
No, Captain America and her, if you watch The Winter Soldier, it's played much more like brother and sister than it is lover.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is like, that's what, like, if you're saying that there is a pairing there that is beyond friendship or beyond, you know, war buddies or anything like that, then you're reaching, you're looking. And I feel like that's what people were doing with Hawkeye and Black Widow. What do you think of the Hulk and Black Widow getting together?
See, of all the things in the movie that I liked, this was the one plot line where I was okay with it, but it started to strain credulity just a little bit for me. I know you're not a fan of Scarlett Johansson. I love her. I really think that her portrayal of Black Widow has gone up ever since Avengers 1. I thought she was terrific in Winter Soldier. I thought she was just phenomenal. And here, I think she's good. I wish they hadn't felt the need to pair her up, though, because I like every other scene where she's doing action. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Her on the motorcycle helping out Captain America is fantastic. Love that scene. Yeah. And I feel like it's not portrayed incorrectly, because I think both her and Mark Ruffalo gave those scenes what they as much as they needed. But I think it's a little bit of a leap to think that those two would get together, in spite of the fact that the reason I was able to be okay with it is because they did have some sort of, if not romantic connection, some sort of quote unquote connection from that first film. She was the one who recruited him. She was the one when he was starting to hulk out in the helicarrier, she's the one who he chased, and she tried to calm him down before he hulked out. So, and you know, at that end battle, when he comes back and he apologizes to her for chasing her, and she's like, no, we could use a little bit worse. So there was some connection. It strains credulity, though, and I'm actually happy with the way that it ends.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm glad that you said that you weren't 100% on it and that you weren't like gung-ho about it, because You know, I'm kind of the same way, where I was like, did we really need a romance in the film? Maybe we did, and that's okay. You know, like, if it had to be two characters, I'm glad it was those two characters and not any other characters. With that in mind, I was okay with the idea of it, but I did not like the execution. That was the major thing that I did not like with the movie. Like, if someone said, okay, Tristan, you like the movie a lot, you think it delivered on all of its aspects, if you had to give one thing that you didn't like, what would it be? And I would say the scenes between Scarlett Johansson and Mark Ruffalo, because I didn't like the writing. I did not like the writing in those scenes. I felt like they needed a couple more passes on the drafts, because I felt like it was very cheesy. I thought the dialogue was very weird and wooden and forced.
Yeah, I didn't care too much for the fact that those two were ready to run off in the middle of a global crisis. I'm like, finish your work first, guys.
It was weird. Like, everything about it was weird except for the idea of the two of them getting together.
I'm going to say the one thing I did like about it, and I thought was cool and kind of a unique strategy, is the lullaby in the film.
I like that too.
The fact that she is the one who can bring him back to Banner through, it looks kind of like through, I don't know what you would call it, but it looks like through some sort of like touch therapy, she's able to calm him down.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. And it kind of made me think of it, like, where she's communicating with him when he's in the ship, he's in the stealth ship, and he's getting away, and like, he just leaves the Avengers and leaves the whole situation because he's scared of what he's going to become. Obviously, that's the whole character. But when he's sitting there in the front of the ship, all hulked out, he's just sitting there, and like, he turns off the screen, and then he's just flying on some sort of autopilot. I wanted to see him shrink down. I wanted to see Mark Ruffalo one more time before the movie was over. And I was a little surprised that our last image is of the Hulk in the stealth jet just flying.
You know, I got to say, though, him, I like the way that they set up his exit from the team. I really do.
Oh, yeah. No, I like the exit. I just wanted that one last visual of him coming down.
Oh, I'm just talking about another aspect that I like, because we get the famous Hulk versus Hulkbuster scene that we were promised in so many trailers in this film, and it's spectacular. It's visual, it's gorgeous, it's funnier than I thought it would be.
Yep.
But I love the way that thing ends, where Scarlet Witch's powers finally wear off on him. He comes out of the rubble and sees everyone so petrified and so afraid of what he just did. And in the next scene, when he's back to being Mark Ruffalo, and he's kind of like covered up and hovering, you know, cowering in the in the Quinjet, you can see how ashamed he is.
Yeah, it you get it, you feel it, you understand where he's coming from, and that's why it's not just because he thinks he's going to hurt somebody he loves. It's how society perceives him, and that was a big theme of the movie. And my favorite part, I think, absolutely in that scene, where I laughed the absolute hardest, was where like the Hulkbuster just keeps hitting the Hulk over and over and over and over and over again, and then he stops, and the Hulk does this whole Bruce Lee thing where he kind of fiddles around his mouth, spits the tooth, and then just glares at Tony. And Tony goes, I'm sorry. You just know that he is scared for his life. He's like, what did I just do?
And I just love that scene. And I love the way they set it up, too, where it made sense that the Hulkbuster had to come in at that point. Because all the other Avengers were down. Black Widow specifically was down, so she couldn't be there to calm him down. Mm. There was no other recourse but to bring in the Hulkbuster, and I loved that fight. I really did.
And they mention it before. Like, it wasn't just out of nowhere. Like, they actually mentioned Veronica before.
Which is smart. That I like that they're considering the fact that Hulk, even though Bruce Banner, we established at the end of the first one, does have some sort of control over him. Like, I like that they planned for a worst-case contingency scenario, because he is unstable at the end of the day.
Yeah, he's unstable and could potentially be unstoppable.
All right, so that was cool. And so what else should we talk about, Tristan? What are some of the things that you want to mention? Because I feel like I've been blabbering on.
Here's the thing. I want to talk about Scarlett Johansson a little bit. Don't scoff. Because you said that I'm not a big fan of Scarlett Johansson. I'm not a big fan of Scarlett Johansson, but I will say this, and I'll give credit where credit is due. After Winter Soldier, I was like, hey, okay, all right. I really like I really like Black Widow now. I like the pairing with Captain America and Black Widow. And also after the movie Her, the Spike Jonze movie with Joaquin Phoenix, where she just did the voiceover for the movie. yeah, I love that movie too. And I started to go, I was like, okay, maybe there is more to Scarlett Johansson than I previously thought. You know, like maybe there's some content there. And so I started liking her, and I liked her in Ultron. I really did. And so I wouldn't say I'm a fan of Scarlett Johansson, but I do appreciate her good work. And I think she gives great stuff in the Marvel Universe, specifically Winter Soldier on. The thing with that, though, is and I don't want to say this, and I don't want to be misconstrued here, and I want people to know who I am and where I'm coming from. I do not feel the need for a Black Widow movie.
Here's the thing. I wouldn't object if they made one, but I'm not clamoring to see one either. And that's... I don't think that's the fault of Scarlett Johansson. I don't think that's to the detriment of her or her character. I just think that she's a character that works well in a pairing. Not necessarily a romantic pairing. A pairing. She's a good buddy.
And Very true.
That's what I loved about her in The Winter Soldier specifically, is because it felt like a buddy war, almost like a cop movie, except that it really wasn't a cop movie, but it's that same kind of dynamic that she works with so well, and especially with Chris Evans, who she's worked with, I think since she was 17, they've done like 5 movies together, even outside of the MCU. So pairing her up with someone allows her to bounce off dialogue and interaction and ideas. And I think that she's firing on all cylinders when they let her do that.
And that's the thing, is like, I think you hit it on the head for me, is that like, I'm not going to be opposed if they come out with a Black Widow movie. I'm not going to go like, oh, that's a mistake. That's a horrible decision. I'm not going to go see it. Not at all. Not at all. And basically what I'm trying to say is like, there's this big subsect of Marvel fandom that judges other people, saying that like, oh, like you're not trustworthy, or you're not a real fan if you don't think the exact same way that I do. And what I'm trying to tell you guys is, it's okay. If you want a Black Widow movie, great. If you don't want a Black Widow movie, that's just as great. That's fine. We all have our likes and dislikes. It doesn't make you less of a fan, or more importantly, less of a feminist. Okay?
Right.
That's the thing. It's like, they are not mutually exclusive. I am, by me saying I don't want a Black Widow movie, is not me saying I don't want a female-led Marvel movie. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's just the character of Black Widow. And if I love her pairing with Captain America, I did not like Captain America First Avenger. I think it's a horrible movie. I loved Winter Soldier. It made me a Captain America fan, and it made me a Black Widow fan. Every Captain America movie from here on out, I want to be a buddy-buddy movie with Black Widow. Heck, don't call it a Captain America movie anymore. Call it Captain America and Black Widow, for all I care. Because I thoroughly believe that the two of them together are better than them on their own.
I think so, too. Well, Cap's becoming more and more interesting to me, but he always was. I mean, it's
Chris. See, I know you're the big Cap fan, so I know you don't think exactly like I do, but...
Well, first of all, it's Chris Evans. And second of all... I just think his story has gotten more interesting since he got unfrozen and has to deal with this real world. And yep. I'll just say off the bat, specifically right now, I love him in this movie. He doesn't have as much standout moments as he does in The Winter Soldier, but how could he? It's an ensemble film.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And second of all, I thought his fight between him and Ultron on top of the truck, he held out his own pretty well.
I was really surprised too, because I was like, part of me was just kind of like, really? Like Cap can do hand to hand with Ultron? Like, I like the fight, and I like that Cap was holding his own, but at the same time, I was like, is this realistic? You know, like, I don't know.
Let him shine. I mean, like, we want to feel like he can still be the leader of the team, which he very much is in this film.
And I know I'm crying for realism in a Marvel film. I understand how ridiculous that sounds. I get that. But with the rules that were set in the movie, is what I'm saying.
Sure, but I can't deny seeing him not only throw the shield at Ultron, but there's one point where he throws it and then kicks it into Ultron in midair. Like, if you're not paying attention, it's a blink and you miss it. But it's just cool.
It's very cool, yeah.
And so I'm happy with what he did. And speaking of the romance that I didn't really like between Black Widow and Hulk, the moment that I did like is when Captain America talks to Hulk during the party, or talks to Banner during the party, and says, look, as the foremost leading authority on waiting too long, don't.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
You know, he's just a... That's the thing I like about Captain America, is he's just a good person at heart. And you want to like him.
And at the same time, I mean, when they were like, when they did the whole language thing, like when Tony Stark swore at the beginning of the film, it just out of instinct, Captain America goes language, and they make it a theme throughout the movie where whenever somebody swears, they're just like, oh, Cap doesn't like that. You know, like it really showed that how close knit they are and how embarrassed Cap was. But then it shows you like this guy is a great guy. And also, like, one of my favorite moments is when Cap nudges Mjolnir. I'm probably not pronouncing
Mjolnir.
Mjolnir. Thank you. I always pronounce the J, and I know I shouldn't. When he nudges it a little bit and Thor, like, gets worried. We saw that in the trailer, and I'm so glad that it stayed in the movie. And it's perfect because out of all of the Avengers, you know, like, Cap would be the one who would be almost worthy because he's such a good soul.
You know, yeah. I love that scene, and yet I thought for sure that meant that Captain America was going to wield the hammer by the end of this film.
Really?
I figured why show that unless you're going there, but I like what they did with it later. I'm not really criticizing it. By showing that, they're indicating something. I'm hoping maybe by the end of this whole run and before Chris Evans leaves the role that he'll get to wield the hammer at least once. but I don't know
if I agree with you on that one. I think what they did in the movie, and we'll get to that, I think that was more than enough, because you don't want to have all these multiple people like grabbing the hammer. I mean, I know you do in the comic books. I mean, even Black Widow grabs the hammer at one point in the comic books.
I was wondering too why he couldn't lift it, because you would think that Cap is pure of heart and he could do it. But then I read somewhere someone had made the comment of he could do it, but right in that moment he's doing it for the wrong reasons. He's doing it because people are wanting him to show off. Oh, so
that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I always just felt like there's only like one person who could be worthy at one time, but I realize that if you read the comic books, it's, you know, like there are multiple people who can be worthy.
Well, speaking of that, Tristan, someone else does wield the hammer by the end of this film.
Okay, so since people who are listening to this have seen the movie, we all know that it's the Vision who wields it. How did your audience react?
Gasped. Like, they were just like, oh, you know, it's like one of those reactions. And the way that it was shot, too, was great, because he just turns around, picks up the hammer, pauses for a second, gives it to Thor, and then he walks off.
It says, like, we need to get going, or you need this, or something like that. And I'm glad that they, like, because my audience reaction was the same way. It was a huge gasp. It was a, oh my gosh. And then followed by just copious amounts of laughter when we see that wide shot of the rest of the team. And they, I'm glad that they held on it for as long as they did, because you needed that time for the audience to react, because if they just did a quick cut to the next thing, you would have missed something because everybody was just in love with that moment.
Well, it was a whole theme throughout the film, because we had the competition at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then during another fight when they're fighting Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch with Ultron, Quicksilver sees it go by and tries to grab it, just like he did with, I think, the shield at one point or something. He tries to grab it, mm-hmm. but of course he can't grab it, so it sends him flying back. So it was a running theme throughout this movie with the hammer.
Right, right. And it was a great way to end, and like I loved it. And I think talking about the Vision as a whole might be another episode, because there's a lot to talk about him. Like, even though he's in a small part of the movie, it's an interesting character.
He's
addition.
So memorable, though, and I gotta say mm-hmm. that I don't know what your feelings on him were, but the long and short of it is, for me, is that I was afraid that Vision might be a step too far in this film, but I love the way Paul Bettany played it. I love the way that his genesis, and I love the way his conversation with Ultron at the end, right before he kills the last drone. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Yes. Yeah, me too. Like, I love the Vision. I love how Paul reacts to it. I didn't like his genesis. I'm being picky here, but right. Like, I didn't like his genesis.
That was fast. It was fast.
It was very fast, and they're just like, oh, we're just going to create biomatter and then a brain. Mm-hmm. Like, we can just do that now. Yeah. I know it's the MCU and anything is possible, but it just felt very rushed. And it's like, oh, because we need to create the Vision and we need this to happen, we're going to make this technology available. And like, I get that. It's just a little rushed to me. I don't like the look of Vision. I'm just completely nitpicking. I don't like the look of the Vision, but I like the character. And I like how he's portrayed, if that makes sense.
I at the very least, I left the theater interested to see where they take him next. I obviously want to see more of him.
Yes, me too.
Last thing we'll touch on before we give our final ratings are the other two new characters, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. For me, I gotta say that a lot of people were criticizing Quicksilver because he has a lot to live up to from last year. We loved the Quicksilver in Days of Future Past.
Right.
And while I never felt that he hit those highs, I don't think that he was as terrible as some of the reviews were suggesting. But I'll be completely 100% honest with you. Of those two characters, my focus was entirely on Elizabeth Olsen and Scarlet Witch.
And I don't think that's by any fault of your own. I think that's definitely the focus that the movie took.
And it is the focus because... massive spoiler, guys. If you listen this far, you know we're giving spoilers, but Quicksilver dies at the end of this film.
Right.
Or it's implied that he dies. I think they're actually going to keep him dead.
I think he's pretty solidly dead. I mean, those were a lot of bullets through his body.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know what death of the MCU is like, it's a temporary career setback. But
speaking of which, like Joss Whedon, now that he's no longer under contract, he's kind of letting all these truth bombs fly, and he's getting a lot of criticism from people because he said, like, he thought Daredevil should have been a movie. He thinks, like, as far as he's concerned, Phil Coulson is dead in the MCU and that the TV verse is separate from the MCU. He believes that too many people who die are brought back. And, you know, like, he's just dropping all these things. And so, like, people are getting, like... vitriolic, to borrow your word. It's just like people are getting all spewing hatred towards Joss Whedon about this stuff, and I just don't understand it.
I wasn't spewing hatred, but I do question.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you were.
No, I do. The only thing is, I'll say is I do question why kind of take that tone now when his movie's about to come out. You know, you wouldn't think that it now would be the good time to kind of be nitpicking or airing out dirty laundry, if there is any. I hope there's not. I hope he's leaving on good terms.
Here's the thing: it's just like just from. This is pure conjecture, but just, you know, like he was such a huge figurehead as well as a controlling force of the MCU that he had his fingers in all of the pies, and he was a creative consultant on movies that he wasn't a producer or a director. He was the guiding creative force behind it. And I'm sure that, I mean, he got told no a lot. And I'm sure that he butted heads with Kevin Feige a lot, and I'm sure that he butted heads with a lot of other producers, and I'm sure that, like, he, you know, like, he has his opinions, and he, like, when people have their opinions, they think that they're right. I know that I do. And so, like, I'm not putting Joss Whedon on godlike status, but I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan. I've been a Joss Whedon fan since the 90s. Let him air it out, whatever he wants to say. Like, but the thing is, he's not being a bastard about it. Like, people are taking one line at a time and saying, oh, he's a jerk because he says these things. But, like, if you read the whole interview, he's like, yeah, I believe that Daredevil should have been a movie because it's kind of like the Batman of the Marvel Universe. But if the TV show works, it works, you know, and he's not being the jerk that some people are painting him to be.
No, certainly not. The only thing that I wish would be avoided, but it can't be because it's the internet, is that... oh, you know, Joss Whedon says this about Marvel. Clearly, Marvel doesn't let their directors have any creative freedom. And the thing I'll say about that is clearly they do, because this still feels like a Joss Whedon film.
Feels like a Joss Whedon film. It felt like a James Gunn film. It felt like a Russo film. All of those films felt like those people.
But not only that, but the MCU is so tightly interwoven at this point. I mean, there's a lot of intersecting storylines just in this film, and I'm sure going forward. You gotta have someone who keeps things in line, because if it strays too far offline, it wouldn't be good. So I'll say that maybe it is restrictive, and maybe that is some frustrating for people who are creative, but it has to be there in order for this shared universe concept to see it through to the end. So I don't think anyone's truly at fault here.
I completely agree with you, Matt, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, like, is Joss Whedon have more of a negative tone than he has in the past? Absolutely. That's what happens. Okay, he's no longer employed by Marvel. And so let's put this in perspective, okay? So here's the thing, is that, like, is what he's saying is hate spewing? No, it's just a little bit of criticism. We have said much worse when it comes to the Marvel Universe. And just this guy has been so intricately involved. I'm sure that there was a lot of fights, a lot of shouting matches. And what he's saying is incredibly tame. So maybe we should respond in kind and keep our criticisms just as tame.
Yeah, and to wrap it up, Tristan, I'll just go really quickly. I think that he's allowed to do this a little bit because this movie obviously took a lot out of him. Like, you look at him, this man is tired. Like, super tired. And I don't blame him because this film is really big. So I'm kind of happy that we're going to get some new blood in there with the Russos. I think that hopefully they're not a one-hit wonder. I think they're going to do good with Cap 3 and Infinity War. So looking forward to that. And just real briefly, Scarlet Witch, really, really loved her. She's my, I think of the new characters, she is my favorite. I thought she was acted well, but she has, I'll be honest with you, she has the powers that if I was a superhero, I wish I would have. I've always wanted telekinesis.
Energy blast. Like whenever you're a kid, you always like some. Yeah, you can try to imagine yourself like with a pretty intense fighting style, or with with cool ninja moves. But you can't really pretend that and see it within yourself. And so, but when you like, you can always imagine an energy burst coming out of your hands or a fireball coming out of your eyes. And with Scarlet Witch, you can kind of see yourself pretend to be that character.
And I thought it was really clever because I thought for me, the Quicksilver sacrifice was really poignant, really liked it. And also too, they've now differentiated themselves from Fox because now they no longer have the worry about those characters overlapping. Fox has Quicksilver, MCU has Scarlet Witch now. So I thought that was kind of clever. And
yeah,
what I especially liked about the Quicksilver death is what it did for her and what I'm sure it's going to do for her as a character, because we see in the film that those two were so interdependent and intertwined that when he dies, she can feel it. And I love the fact that when she gets so upset, she has like five or six Ultron drones coming at her.
Yeah.
And she just gets so angry and so upset and so distraught that she just bursts this energy and obliterates them all. And you see how powerful she actually really is when she becomes emotionally unstable.
I was surprised with that, and I really liked it too. I think it was very well done. First reactions with the twins, eh. You know, I guess they're okay. I didn't like Quicksilver really at all. I thought he was really bland and really boring, but I loved how he ended. I think he ended well, and they gave his death meaning, very, very solid meaning. And with Scarlet Witch, I didn't end on a negative note. I was just kind of like, okay, we'll see where we go from here.
I'm interested to see more of her. That's the biggest compliment I can give her. And a lot of people were crapping on the accents, and I'm like, it's fine. They're Chekhov accents. It's nothing that I'm not used to as a Star Trek fan. Plus, they're from a made up country, so maybe that we can just call that that's their accent over there. You know what I mean? So fine, whatever. But by the end of this film, the new Avengers, Captain America, Black Widow, War Machine, Falcon, who has a new suit, and
right.
Scarlet Witch, whose new getup I actually really like.
Yeah, I need to pay attention. Before we close out, we need to talk about the mid-credit sequence, which I missed.
You missed?
I missed it because, Joss Whedon made an announcement saying there's not going to be an end-credit sequence. And I was like, okay, all right, cool. I guess that's the case. And so right when the credits started rolling, I left because there wasn't going to be an end-credit sequence. I didn't know that there was going to be a mid-credit sequence.
Yeah, well, they started... I thought you must have read that because that was on the internet. And it made me laugh considering that some people working out saying, that sucked, there was no end-credit sequence. And I'm like, he's only been saying it for the last month.
I know, right? And I know people were... I made that comment too on Twitter saying, like, apparently that wasn't enough. You know, him making an announcement to the world saying that there wasn't going to be one. And then they're like, what? I waited for nothing? So, I mean, in the mid-credit sequence, we see a Josh Brolin Thanos pick up the gauntlet saying, I guess I'll do it myself.
Fine, I'll do it myself.
Now, can you describe the gauntlet to me? There, obviously, it was missing gems, right?
It's missing gems, and it's the gems that first of all, we see a gem in this film that comes out of the scepter that Loki had, which I think confirms a lot of fan theories. We've seen three so far, and I think there's five of them. I'm not exactly the best person to ask because I don't know the comic story, but okay. There's at least three that we know of. Maybe four if the Tesseract is another one.
It is one.
But okay, so there's four that we know of. So there's this Loki's staff, there's the Tesseract, there's the Aether from Thor 2, and then there's the one from Guardians of the Galaxy that dissolved people.
And I think that there's six in total, because I think there's one stone on each finger and then one on the hand in general.
Right. So that's a tease for Infinity War. And some people call it underwhelming. I agree. It's a little bit quick, but I'm excited to see where this goes, because obviously this is going, if it's anything like Tony Stark's vision at the beginning of this movie, it's going to be apocalyptic. Yeah.
And the thing, I was like, I mean, I don't understand why people complain about mid-credit sequences or in-credit sequences and how they're lame or short or anything like that. They're all bonus, people. All right, don't judge a movie by its mid-credit sequence or its in-sequence. It could have had nothing, you know. I'm excited. And this is what we've been working towards since day one. You know, like this, the movies have been going towards the gauntlet, okay, towards the Infinity Stones. And so, I'm excited as anybody.
All right, so we'll wrap it up, Tristan. Do you know how you want to rate this movie and where it falls for you yet? Or are you still want to see it again?
I still want to see it again before I rank it within the MCU, but I can give it a ranking of 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, I liked it. It's very entertaining. It's great. 4 stars because I don't give 5 stars lightly. It wasn't a perfect film, but nor did I expect it to be a perfect film. And so I'm saying 4 out of 5.
And for me, I think I'm going to echo you a little bit. I think that a lot of the criticism for this film is because there are such monumental expectations that I think that you'd have to be divine in order to meet every single one of them. Mm-hmm. And some people walk away from that feeling disappointed. I certainly didn't, though. I love maybe it's because I love these characters so much. And even if the story isn't exactly what I thought it would be, seeing these characters interact together and just the chemistry that they had, because I really think that in spite of all the great action, in spite of all the storylines that they try to adapt, the key the MCU is going to live and die by is the chemistry between the actors. And I think that that's here in this movie in spades. I love the villain of this movie. I love the story of this movie. I even like a lot of the people complain that this was nothing but a setup movie for the future films. And there's a lot of setup. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of setup and some of it works and some of it feels a little clunky, but I liked what was here. I think one of my favorite scenes is the Cap Iron Man chopping wood scene because that teases what's going to come next. But overall, I really, really love this film. I think I'm going to see it multiple times. I don't know, for me personally, if it's better than the first Avengers, but I'll say this much. If it's not quite as euphoric as the way the first Avengers made me feel, I think that this is a more interesting story.
So what out of 5 stars, what would you give it?
I'm going to go with the 4 for now as well. And in the MCU ranking right now, I mean, I can't say that this is going to change anytime soon, so who knows where it will be later. But for me, my top 3 as of today are Winter Soldier, I think Avengers 1, and maybe Age of Ultron right below it at number 3.
I need to do a rewatch. I need to do an epic rewatch of the Marvel films, and because Thor was my number 1 for a very long time, but I don't think it is anymore. I need, before I can give any kind of ranking, I need to do a rewatch and do some soul searching. But thank you so much for listening. This has been a lot of fun. We hope you enjoyed the movie. We hope you enjoyed our podcast about the movie. We would love to know what you think. Tell us about what rating you would give it out of 5 stars, or what you liked or what you didn't like. You can find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at MHanson0207.
And you can also go to our website, thenerdparty.com, or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And we already talked about reviews at the beginning, so we appreciate any help that you can give us. Until next time, this has been The Nerd Party, and we'll see you next week.
Coming up next week.
Your expectations are different on the first day of shooting than they are on the 100th day of shooting. On the 100th day of shooting, you're like, if I can finish this and not shoot myself or anyone else around me, I will have done good work. You know, on the first day, you're trying so hard to kind of like make sure that this gets polished and that gets polished and that you're building on the right thing. And so I don't really, first days to me are usually sort of debilitating because I kind of go, oh God, I forgot. It's not going to go like clockwork. It's a fucking movie. It's just like all those movies. It's just like all those other movie experiences. It's just going to be a lot of plodding and hard work.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Another naked pic request. Why doesn't he stop? I know, he just keeps on and on and on. Maybe I should just send him one?
No way!
He said I could trust him.
Heard that before.
Look what happened to, what's her name? Some guy shared her pic and it broke the internet. Everyone saw it. Her parents, her teachers. Poor girl.
He's getting well desperate.
Ugh, forget him.
No one should be pressured into sending a naked picture. To find out more, search Disrespect Nobody.